Of the Pack Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's at ticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and this is an exciting show. The first of the year, Pulse of the Pack is going to get to talk about Green Bay Packers football that has already been played. I'm your host, Jacob Wessendorf, here with my esteemed co-host, Jason Perrone. Jason, how's your hand feeling?
It's still a little sore, Jacob. It's weird. I feel like I'm having sympathy pains. You know, it's like, remember that movie from back in, well, I mean, I know there's an age gap here, so you might not remember it, but that movie Stigmata back in the late 90s. Yeah, so I feel, okay, excellent. So we're on the same page there. Yeah, I'm just waiting for some healing to come my way here. It's been a weird air. It's been a very, very weird air over the last couple of days, and I feel like maybe something is forthcoming in the next, I don't know, day or three.
I believe the way that it goes is 3 days, and Janus Christ rises again. Obviously, Jason and I, if you have not heard, we're going back and forth. Sympathy pain is because Jeff Janis has a broken or a fractured, I don't want to get too far ahead here, but a fracture in his hand. Says he won't practice this week. He had a cast on his hand at practice today. He did not play on Friday night against the Cleveland Browns, which led to some questions about an injury. They said it was jammed fingers. Janis himself actually said it was jammed fingers that led to him to miss that game. He had an ice bag on his hand. Turns out there's a fracture, and he will not practice this week. So, Jason, my first question then off of this show is, should we expect to see him rise again in 3 days?
I don't see why not. I mean, if he's drawing any energy from the Packer Nation and Packer fans and his cult following, then I'm surprised it would take 3 days. I know why it has to take 3 days, but he has to. I mean, those two catches against the Arizona Cardinals were meant to be, Jacob. They were divine in every way, shape, and form that the NFL allows. You know, so I think he's approaching the point where some of his majesticness is going to start to become outlawed by NFL rules. We all know how that evil Commissioner Goodell can be at times. So yes, I fully expect Janis to rise again. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, it's okay to say break because a fracture is still a break. And we know also that the Packers are very creative with how they describe injuries. So for all we know, it might be a hairline fracture and a simple 4-week recovery, or this could be some sort of a more complicated break. I mean, we saw what happened with Ty Montgomery and what that turned out to be. So for all we know, there could be busted ligaments all over Janis's hand. I have absolutely no idea.
Correct. And one other thing to add to this that is kind of funny, we have mentioned in the past that we wanted you guys to send questions to @PackerPulse. Every question we got for today's show was about none other than Jeff Janis. So, Jason, I believe the question came from Alex, whether or not we were holding a candlelight vigil. No, no candlelight vigils. But we are going to mourn the loss of him, at least for the time being. as you guys heard last year with James Jones, you know, in the regular season, all he does is catch touchdowns. Well, in the preseason, all Jeff Janis does is catch touchdowns. So, if nothing else, it does take away some of the entertainment value of these preseason games. And, you know, I was looking forward to see him on the field a little bit. According to, you know, games in camp or things coming out of camp, he hasn't emerged. But maybe he's one of those guys that's just a better game player than he is a practice player. I don't know. This is the NFL. Obviously, you have to be able to do it on the practice field as well as the game field. That's why I've always been skeptical of Janis's impact as a wide receiver. The other question we got, Jason, you've got it. So I will let you introduce the question. We'll lead off the show this way. But question on Jeff Janis was from who and what was it?
Okay, so this was from my ace in the hole, Christina Jenkins, and she wants to know if Jeff Janis is going to be out for an extended period of time or, heaven forbid, no pun intended, longer, who is going to replace Jeff Janis on special teams. Christina's a smart fan, and give her a follow if you're not already. So she knows that the wide receiver situation would take care of itself, but she's more speaking to, which is a very appropriate question, his value on special teams, which is what, Jacob, you and I and some of our guests have also discussed as his primary value on the team. So do you want to lead off with your thoughts on how the Packers might attack that situation?
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, an absolute ace on special teams. The coaching staff today said that, you know, some of the names that came up were Quentin Rollins, Dimitri Goodson, Ladarius Gunter's done it in the past. Some of those guys would probably be your guys in the event that Janis misses some time, which is clear at this point. I mean, I've never had a fracture of my hand, but I have fractured a bone, and typically your recovery time in there is somewhere in from 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. So that brings him into the regular season, which could, you know, the Packers have a variety of options that they're going to have to do and use, because that means essentially, you know, a roster spot is quote-unquote wasted for the first couple weeks because he won't be able to play, or he can play with a club on his hand. But those are the three guys that I see that I have heard about. Obviously, Ron Zook is much smarter about this stuff than I am. He's been a very good special teams coordinator since he arrived in Green Bay. Last year was a good year for them, and Jeff Janis was a big reason of that. What it also does is, you know, Gunners, it also helps the – or it gives some different options in the return game. We saw the other night it was mainly Jared Aberderis as the return man. So that is a big thing because of the competition at receiver and as well as the return game. So Janis, the injury comes at an unfortunate time because he starts losing some ground, not only at receiver, but in some of the special teams role as well. Now, I don't think he's in danger of losing anything as a gunner, but maybe as a returner and definitely as a way of getting reps in the offense. So that's what I think here about Janis. What do you think here as far as his overall role with the team with this injury?
Well, right now his role is in the training room, which is never anything that's going to contribute to the team on the field. So, you know, I just – every time we get into an injury situation with the Packers, it's a tough conversation because we just don't know how bad it is because they never share any information. So, and he's a very polarizing figure on this team. So there's going to be no shortage of discussion about what it is, who it is. All the internet doctors are going to come out and start explaining what's happening with the hand. They will have some sort of inside information that we don't about what the injury is and what ligaments are involved and how they had the exact same procedure done 2 years ago, and this is what their doctor said. So that's what I think the discussion about Janis is going to be. His role right now is to heal. So that's that. But as far as replacing him, I think, you know, from what I saw on Friday night and in looking at the roster, I don't think there's any shortage of options. I think they certainly have some guys that can get the job done. I will say this. I wasn't impressed with Dimitri Goodson. And I, like I said before the show, I'm hoping that the Packers can find some other options. I mean, he's going to miss some time anyway because of a suspension, so that's got to weigh against him in the roster battle. And we're seeing some defensive backs really step up that we're going to talk about later that may also become options. You mentioned Ladarius Gunter, Quentin Rollins. I'm always a little nervous putting starters on special teams unless they're absolutely vital. So, you know, you put a guy like Rollins on gunner duty, and, you know, if he happens to be one of your starting corners, which it looks is looking like is going to be the case in some capacity, then I'm always a little bit nervous there. But the point is there's options. On the kicking game, I think we need to see a little bit more of Trevor Davis just to see what he's got to offer, and that may settle that right there. That's my biggest concern, or you know, my biggest loss would be the kick return that Janis seemed to have at least once every game that busted out for like 40 or 45 yards and put the Packers near midfield. The field position thing, obviously, very important. So that's how I see it kind of shaking out if he's going to miss any extended time.
Well, and with all jokes aside, I mean, here's some reality when it comes to the receiver situation. Thus far in camp, obviously Jordy Nelson hasn't played, but you know Jordy Nelson is a better player than Jeff Janis as a wide receiver. Randall Cobb, same thing. After that, Ty Montgomery has made more plays. Devontae Adams has made more plays. Jared Aberderis has made more plays. Trevor Davis has made more plays. And Geronimo Allison, undrafted receiver out of Illinois, has made more plays. That puts, and forgive me on my math here, but I believe that's seven guys ahead of him as far as guys that have actually made some sort of production as a wide receiver. You know, Jeff Janis, he's a measurables king. He's big. He's fast. You know, he runs well. He catches the ball when it's thrown to him. But reality is, you know, kind of like we talked about in the last show, schoolyard nonsense is how he's made most of his plays. NFL offenses aren't run like schoolyard nonsense. It just isn't. So, Janis, like I said before, I think is going to make this team solely because of his ability on special teams. Ron Zook called him a, quote, core player on special teams. That means that, to me at least, he's got a pretty good shot to make this team, and I can't imagine them cutting a guy that's going to be one of their core players in a unit that is one-third of the game, and a guy that really made a huge difference in their punt coverage, their kickoff game, their kickoff return game last year. But on the offensive side of things, you know, everybody's been looking for this guy. We've got people on Twitter that are talking about, you know, how he's better than Devontae Adams. Packers need to get him on the field instead of Devontae Adams as the guy who was the incumbent third receiver last year. Reality is, Janis has been the eighth best receiver on this roster in training camp. That's a lot of guys. Obviously, like I said, his special teams value puts him above some of those guys. But on the offensive side of things, if they were to release Janis in favor of some of these other receivers, you can't really argue it from an offensive side of things because he just hasn't put it all together. And I know that he had that big game in the playoffs, and I know that was great to watch. But, you know, the reality is, like we've said numerous times, two catches and a big chunk of those yards, and at least one of those touchdowns, obviously, came on plays that just aren't going to be things that are going to be consistently done. And that's the hard part with Jeff Janis. And I know we're going to talk about the receivers here right now. I know, Jason, we've talked about this. I am so happy I don't have to make this decision because it is going to be tough. Because one thing that I noticed on Friday night was Jared Aberderis lining up all over the field. He played the boundary. He played the slot. He was a punt returner. The hard part about evaluating receivers on Friday was the quarterback play. And Joe Callahan, bless his heart, played well, all things considered. Marquise Williams, same thing. That's not Aaron Rodgers, and that's not Brett Hundley. And, you know, there were some throws that were missed that were easy plays, pitch and catch type stuff. Or, you know, if Hundley or Rodgers were playing, they probably would have found a guy that was open that Callahan or Williams didn't. Things of that nature. It's hard to evaluate receivers when quarterback play is below average. But Jared Aberderis was all over the field, and he returned punts. That tells me they want to keep him. Aaron Rodgers goes out of his way to talk about how well Aberderis has done. He's talked about other guys. It's not a slight to Jeff Janis. He says Janis has progressed well, but he's talked about other guys having good camps, great camps, whatever the case may be there. I want to start with Aberderis because this is the guy that, of all the guys that I thought would have a folk following when the Packers drafted all these receivers, I really thought it would be him. Fifth-round pick out of Wisconsin, and let's be honest, he's a white receiver, which people in Wisconsin tend to love. Janis obviously has that going for him as well. But he's a white receiver from Wisconsin. That's the guy I thought would have the folk following. This guy has been very good in camp. And, you know, this may not carry over. There's obviously some time left here. But he continues to impress. He may be the best route runner on the team, not named Jordy Nelson. And he's built up a good relationship with Aaron Rodgers, and that matters. It does. I mean, building up a rapport with
your quarterback, starting quarterback, is going to matter. And Abadaris has more of that at this stage than Jeff Janis does. Trevor Davis, Jason, we've talked about it. He's a 4-3, 4-2-ish, 4-3 40 guy. Not a guy that really gets through waivers to the practice squad. So if the Packers release him, it's pretty much knowing he's not going to be on the team. Ty Montgomery's not getting cut. He was a third-round pick last year. Devontae Adams isn't getting cut. He was a second-round pick a couple years ago. He's had a pretty good camp. He's had some inconsistencies, but he's done more good things than bad. And I still think Devontae Adams has a lot of potential. I don't think that he just forgot how to play football last season. I have a hard time believing that. Jeff Janis is a measurables king. I just don't know if he'll ever be a good enough wide receiver to consistently contribute in the offense. I think our guy, Zach Cruz, said it best when he said, you know, Jeff Janis is really Travis Jervey with two big catches in a playoff game. And that's really, I think, a good way to put it. I understand it because he's tall, he runs really fast, and he's made some exciting plays. I understand why that would be exciting. But the reality is, football isn't played on a piece of paper that says height, weight, and speed. Football is played on the field, and Jeff Janis has had one shining moment, to use March Madness terminology. But the reality is, a lot of that stuff just isn't going to carry over to actual on-field stuff. The Packers clearly can't trust him to be spot at the right time. You know, Aaron Rodgers, it's been talked about by beat writers how Janis runs a poor route, makes poor adjustments to the ball, all kinds of stuff like that. He just doesn't have enough knowledge of the little things in the offense. And I'm not going to blame Janis for that. It's a, you know, it's a tough transition to go from Division II Saginaw Valley State, where it was when in doubt, hey, Jeff, go deep, to the Packers offense, which even guys like Jordy Nelson and James Jones, Greg Jennings, guys that have had this offense down, been great players over their career in Green Bay, struggled early in their careers to understand it. Struggle to get on the same page as Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is a meticulous freak when it comes to preparation. He expects the same out of his receivers. What I'm getting at with all this is, Jason, today, right now, on August 14th, when the Packers break camp, who are going to be their wide receivers?
Good Lord. Of all the questions you could have possibly asked, you're throwing that one out there. So, okay, everybody, get your popcorn, settle in, sit down. This is going to be a 30-minute stroll through the Packers wide receiver position and Jason's thoughts on who is going to make this roster. Man, that's a loaded question. Well, I'll also say this, too, before I get into that, Jacob. I have to disagree slightly in that I know that you spend a lot of time coaching, and so you have that mentality and that patience level with athletes and players, and I think you're able to take a look at the situation and understand a player's development. I say it is Janis's fault. This is his third season in the NFL. He's been in this offense for as long as he has, and I don't think reports of him coming out and not knowing where to be and the whole idea that he doesn't understand the playbook and some of those types of things, you know, they can't all be wrong. There's got to be a reason why those things are being said. You hear the frustration in Aaron Rodgers' voice in the past. You see it on his facial expression. You see it he's tried to get the ball to Janis in practice. He's not running the right routes. He doesn't seem to understand the nuances of where to be on the field. It's not acceptable anymore. I think that hall pass expired at the end of last year. So this was the training camp where the light bulb was supposed to go off. You talked about the cult following that we kind of thought Abadaris would have, and I think he was headed down that road 2 years ago in training camp, and then he suffered the ACL tear and wasn't able to continue to practice. But when he took the field for the first time, from my understanding, the folks that were out at Reinicke Field or Clark Hinkle Field, whichever one they were on, were screaming and yelling because he's a local hero. He played for the Badgers. I think he was definitely slated to be that guy. So then he's injured and he's hurt, and then it comes out and creeps out that Jeff Janis is another Jordy Nelson. He just doesn't have except he's a second, seventh rounder, and he's more raw, and he doesn't have the NFL experience. Well, Packers fans love Jordy Nelson. So to have two Jordy Nelsons on the field is about the closest thing to Christmas as you can. So therefore, everybody got on this Janis bandwagon. All of a sudden, he's the cult hero, and everybody, you know, wants to find ways to keep him and then enter the Arizona playoff game, and all holy broke loose. I can't say all hell broke loose. That would be sacrilegious, right? So how does the wide receiver position shake up? Well, the one thing that happened that really threw everything off this past week is Ty Montgomery got back on the field, and he actually played in the preseason game and saw a decent amount of snaps. So the Packers are trying to work him in. This isn't just a test and try it out type of a thing. I mean, I was convinced that he was going to start the season on regular season PUP, which means 6 weeks. I just didn't see any way that he was going to get on the field. And also, the Packers tend to do that. Like I said in the last show, they get creative with injuries and they kind of do some things they need to do in order to protect players from going to other teams, to keep their roster whole. You know, it's very convenient. Ty Montgomery's not quite ready to come back. He goes on PUP. He doesn't take up a roster spot. So for 6 weeks, you got these six spots. If Janis is healthy, I think it's Nelson, Cobb, Adams. Then you've got Ty Montgomery, and this is obviously assuming that the rest of the guys are healthy, Janis and Jared Aberderis. There's your six guys right there. Well, now that Janis is injured, I don't, you know, at this point right now, and you said he's the eighth best receiver, I think that's probably true. Jared Aberderis is doing everything. He's the John Kuhn of the wide receivers. I mean, he does every damn thing that he needs to do, and he is everywhere that he needs to be. You saw that play that he made, you know, I think it might have been on a punt return where, you know, he broke a couple tackles and was spinning and weaving, and it's a preseason game, and then I'm thinking to myself, well, don't get hurt again, you know, because he's just – that's the type of player that he is. He's going to give it his all on every play. He's going to try to do everything that he can. He's out there against Arizona in the playoffs contributing, trying to do everything that he can, and technically – he does the right things. That's why he has a good relationship with Aaron Rodgers. He does the things that Rodgers values. And you said, Jacob, it matters. The chemistry between Rodgers and his receivers, it's huge. I mean, we know that Rodgers has his favorites. Let's just be honest there. That's just the reality of the situation. So if the ball's going to go to those guys, and Aberderis happens to be one of them, if he can get open, I don't care what the name on the back of the number on the back of the jersey is. Just get in the damn end zone. So Jared Aberderis, for all intents and purposes, is going to be on this roster. So I think even if Janis is healthy, they've got one heck of a decision to make. But because of the fact he's so far behind where he should be as a receiver, the Packers at some point are going to have to cut the cord on the Janis train, because as I say this, I'm thinking about Jared Bush and how that was his sole purpose. I mean, when Jared Bush went in as a defensive back, it was a disaster. Was a complete nightmare. So he was nothing but a special teams ace. And Jeff Janis is the offensive equivalent of that, except for he's made a couple plays that were very exciting, although I guess Jared Bush intercepting Ben Roethlisberger in the Super Bowl should count for something, right? So, you know, there you have it. I think it comes down to, like you said, Jacob, I'm just glad that I don't have to be the one to make this decision, but Janis is the seventh guy at the very most right now. I mean, Geronimo Allison, I think, needs to show us a little bit more before I start pegging him, you know, placing him up above a Jeff Janis. But Janis is the seventh guy right now. So if they deem Trevor Davis good enough to return kicks and he's effective enough, and we see it in preseason and he can do it, if Ty Montgomery is healthy enough and they feel good about putting him back there, which, like I said, when we were talking about Quentin Rollins, I'm not a huge fan of putting a regular player in on special teams, especially in a position where they could get hurt. But then Janis's value diminishes, and you don't have that quandary. And then you've got bigger decisions to make, because, you know, and if he gets cut after Lambeau finishes burning and after Ted Thompson's lawn finishes burning, somebody is going to pick the guy up. He's going to be out of Green Bay, and he won't be an option. So that's my answer. I don't know if I gave a very clear answer necessarily there, but that's kind of how I see it shaking up, with or without the Janis injury taking longer to heal.
Definitely a lot of interesting stuff in there. One thing I wanted to address, as far as one thing with Jeff Janis that I always seem to see with his fan base, is conspiracy theories that come with it. You know, and people seem to side with him of, well, it's, you know, it's the coach's fault, or Aaron Rodgers doesn't like him, and that's why he doesn't throw him the ball, and stuff like that. And My thought on that is very simple. When you talk about, let's just put the three things separate. The head coach and the main offensive person on the Packers coaching staff is Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy is a Super Bowl winning head coach. He's had the Packers in three NFC championship games. They've won one, obviously won a Super Bowl. And I've mentioned before, I believe he's the second best coach in Packers history, not named Vince Lombardi. The quarterback is Aaron Rodgers, a two-time MVP, and easily considered one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, if not the best. I know last year was a down year, but that was a down year by his incredible standards. A lot of guys would kill for an off year that includes 31 touchdowns and 8 interceptions and calling that a down year. Aaron Rodgers, like I said, two-time MVP, one of the best quarterbacks in football. Mike McCarthy, Super Bowl champion head coach and one of the best coaches in the history of a very proud franchise. And then you've got Jeff Janis, who's really fast, really tall, and has made a couple kind of fluky-ish plays. You're siding with the wrong person is what I'm getting at here. If you're going to be mad at somebody for a lack of development, Jason, I agree with you. Be angry with Jeff Janis because, you know, like I said, I wasn't going to blame him, but at the same time, you know, I guess I'm kind of waffling a little bit, which in honor of Brett Favre, why the hell not? But I'm waffling a little bit. If there is someone to blame, it is him. Because, like you said, he's had two full years. He's in his third season now. Maybe the guy is just not cut out to be a wide receiver. Not everybody that's big and fast is cut out to be an NFL wide receiver. That's just kind of how it works. So, again, it's not Aaron Rodgers doesn't like him. It's not Mike McCarthy doesn't like him. These people are paid to win football games in the National Football League. If Jeff Janis, they felt, could help them do that, Janis would be on the field. He'd be a starter, and he'd be a key contributor to this roster. But he's not, so they haven't been. So to answer my own question that I asked Jason, I really thought I was going to be the surprise, but I am going to go with the same six guys you had. Unfortunately, I know Trevor Davis was a fifth-round pick. There's been precedent for this in the past, though, for Thompson to cut a rookie. Mostly it's been guys that have been so obviously ineffective. But the reality is this year is kind of a special situation at receiver. You've got Jordy Nelson, who is supposed to come back at some point, still remains on the PUP list as of right now. Cobb, Devontae Adams, Ty Montgomery, Jeff Janis will be retained as a special teams player, and then Jared Aberderis. The guy has done and made way too many plays to justify cutting him, and that's just how I feel about that in particular. I won't be surprised if Trevor Davis makes the roster over one of the last two guys, but I really do think that you have four roster locks with Nelson, Cobb, Montgomery, and Adams. And then after that, if they keep five or six, it kind of goes from there. But a lot of interesting stuff there on the offensive side of the ball. Thursday night against the Raiders, we'll talk about that here briefly. Aaron Rodgers said he's going to play his practice reps today, and they say otherwise. But at minimum, Brett Hundley should be on the field, which means the quarterback play should be a little bit better and give the guys that are going to be out there at receiver a few more chances to actually make some impressions and make some plays, see what happens. But let's go to the game. The Packers played, and they kept the dream of finishing the season 23-0 alive. Obviously, four preseason games, 16 regular season games, and three playoff games would add up to a 23-0 season. So that is the joke that I'm going to go with for the day. But let's just go, you know, offense, defense, special teams. The Packers won the game 17-11. They scored 4 points on safety, so we'll talk about the defense here in a little bit. It was obviously a preseason game of points. The first thing I want to start with, though, is Fat Eddie Lacy, 4 carries, 24 yards, had a big run where he broke contact. He said today he feels faster and more explosive. He really looked like the Eddie of old on the run where he broke. He broke an 11-yard run on a 3rd-and-1. It probably doesn't mean a whole lot, but it was at least a good sign to see Eddie Lacy looking like the player of old, because the Packers are really looking. They need him to be good, and that's just a reality. They need Eddie Lacy to be the guy. The offense can still be good with James Starks as your primary running back. However, this offense we've seen is much better when Eddie Lacy is the guy pounding the rock, punishing defenses, and setting up that play-action deep ball that the Packers love so very much. But good to see Eddie Lacy rumbling through the secondary again, wasn't it, Jason?
It was. And the big thing that stands out, too, and it's a preseason game, which, like you said, Jacob, means nothing. By the way, love the Brett Favre reference that you slipped in there. I actually laughed. I had myself on mute so that I wasn't interfering with anything you were saying, but that one got a good belly laugh. So nicely done. We spent almost a half hour talking about Jeff Janis, too, just if you're counting all the minutes of how much Janis coverage there has been. So count us in on that parade. But Lacy had, you know, I think he averaged close to 6 yards a carry. He wasn't in very much, so it's not like you can hang your hat on that. But he's got that consistent average that he gets, and he was running hard again. So even though he's dropped some weight, now I have to be honest with you, Jacob. I don't know. He doesn't look different to me than I mean. I guess I must have just conveniently forgotten how big he was at the end of last year. He doesn't look that much different to me. So he still has his size, and I remember. I don't know if it was NFL Radio or one of the various podcasts that covered the Packers during the offseason had Ron Dane in, and they talked about Eddie Lacy and his weight and Ron Dane and his playing days because, you know, he's a former Wisconsin Badger running back who was pretty big. And remembered him saying when he was with the Giants that he struggled to run as effectively when he was smaller, and he preferred to run or play at a specific weight just because of how effective he could be and how much of an edge it gave him when he was taking on defenders and, you know, trying to do his style of running, which is power. You're a power runner, you need something behind it. And not everybody can be built like an Adrian Peterson and still bring that kind of power. Eddie Lacy needs some of that weight. So I thought he ran well. He did well spinning out. I mean, he definitely sees himself in a contract year. I think he's pissed off at everybody's questioning his weight. He's probably sick of talking about his weight. And I think he wants to show that he can play in this league. And despite the fact that he doesn't absolutely love, eat, sleep, live, and drink football every day, he still wants to make a good living at it, and he can continue to do so, whether it's with the Packers or not. I am sure that he wants to prove to the Packers and to Mike McCarthy, who called him out, and which is not very typical of Mike McCarthy, that he can answer the bell. He's definitely on his way. I liked what I saw from him. I'm one of those that still is not convinced that he's back in Green Bay next year. I mean, we've got a lot left to see from him, but from what I saw, it's the Lacy, more of the Lacy of 2014 and 13 than it was in 2015, and that is what this offense needs, especially if there's any sort of return of struggles against, you know, with the passing game. So was very encouraged by what I saw from Lacy. And, you know, you've got Starks in there too as the 1-2 punch. They'll figure out the third guy. The running back situation is very key this year, but I have no qualms at all about what I saw from Lacy. And I expect him, if he's healthy, to start the season hot. I think we're headed for another 1,000-yard season from him.
I agree. And then it was nice to see, you know, like you said, we keep saying we're not sure that he looks smaller, but the other thing about Lacy that was always a thing is, you know, his, you know, and you kind of talked about it, one of his best assets is he's a big back, you know, and it's not necessarily the weight that is the issue. It's the kind of weight that is on him. And you could see last year he was sluggish. He was slow. He just struggled. And the other night he looked like he had quick feet in the hole again. He put a spin move on. You know, last year that was a move that was kind of effective, but not really. And he was quicker to the hole. He was more decisive with his cuts, but he still has the power to run through guys. I agree with you, Jason. If Eddie Lacy is healthy and able, the Packers feed him the ball, no pun intended there, of course, but if they give him the ball, we're looking at 1,000 to 1,200-yard season. I think he'll make some impact in the passing game like he was starting to do in 2014. I really think that this is going to be a big year. I'm excited for the Eddie Lacy rebirth this season, and it was nice to see that start. As far as third running backs, you know, you mentioned some guy will win that. Brandon Burks and John Crockett were the two guys that looked to be the front runners for that. Burks had some nice runs. He was Packers' leading rusher on the night. John Crockett had a couple nice runs. He scored the team's only touchdown on a two-minute drill. So that's something that remains to be seen, how that whole battle will shake out. I think you'll see more of that as the preseason progresses, those three guys getting the lion's share of the rep, or those two guys, excuse me, getting the lion's share of the reps to be their third running back on the roster. As of right now, I have to think that Crockett is the leader in the clubhouse because I think the Packers have seen, they've talked about his role in special teams. They've talked about him potentially making some impact in the offense. I just think that he's a good football player and somebody that really can make an impact in this offense. He's different from Lacy and Starks, and that can be a good thing as a guy. You know, I don't know if he's going to necessarily be a, you know, 1,200-yard rusher in the NFL someday, but a nice role player isn't necessarily a bad thing to have as your third running back. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the tight ends. Obviously, Jared Cook came back after the Hall of Fame game debacle, which I was in town for. Let me tell you, that was a disaster of epic proportions, and shame on you, NFL, but I don't want to rant against the NFL for that. Maybe I can do that later once we get through talking about the game, but we want to talk about football, obviously, first and foremost here. But Jared Cook came back. He lit up practice and then played on Friday night against the Browns, which I thought was a little surprising considering Aaron Rodgers didn't suit up, nor did Brett Hundley. But at the same time, with crappy quarterback play, Jared Cook must have felt right at home with a guy like Joe Callahan. Nothing against Callahan again, but a guy like Callahan throwing him the football. He made some good plays. He caught a couple passes. He had an 8-yard reception for a first down and third down. He had a couple plays, and obviously, like I said, he's been killing it in practice. And again, that is just practice, but the Packers are a better defense than the Browns, and he's making plays with Aaron Rodgers. I keep telling myself to calm down and keep the expectations realistic for Jared Cook, but my goodness, Jason, isn't it exciting to have a guy that can actually, you know, make some plays after the catch like Jared Cook?
I'm completely with you on that, 100%. I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I mean, it's encouraging because he hasn't practiced, but he's obviously a veteran, and this is what you gain, Ted Thompson, when you bring in veterans. If they have to miss some time, it's not like he needs to learn the entire game of football. Yes, he might still be learning the Packers offense, but he knows how to catch football. He knows how to run after the catch. He is what he is physically. He has the ability that he has, and he has displayed that in practice and in games. So this is looking like a really good pickup for the Packers. Once again, Ted Thompson very rarely dips into this avenue to bring players in, but it looks like this might be one where if Cook stays healthy, is going to quickly become a favorite target of Aaron Rodgers, and it's going to be a really good thing for the Packers offense. I liked what I saw for the same reasons that you mentioned. He's catching footballs, getting runs after the catch. He's catching touchdowns in practice. You know, I probably energized in his career to finally be playing for a team that's got a legitimate chance to go to the playoffs. I mean, he was in no man's land playing for the Rams for many years out in St. Louis. So this is a big opportunity for him. I think he realizes that. I mean, his rookie season was in 2009. So you lump him in with the guys like Clay Matthews, you figure, okay, well, they're going into their eighth season here. He's not a spring chicken. He's probably getting to the point where he wants to start seeing some success. And once you start winning games, the job becomes different. Your career takes a different path. You become a different person. So instead of turning into what some guys turn into when they're playing for the Browns their whole career, or, you know, teams that just never find success during the regular season, I think you're going to see a very motivated Jared Cook, especially when you get towards the latter part of the season and his desire to contribute and what he can bring. I will also caution fans, because Packers fans for some reason love to turn present guy into the redux of past guy. This is not your Michael Finley. The Packers don't need your Michael Finley back. Yes, he was great at times in his prime. We'll all remember the Arizona playoff game in 2009. But this is Jared Cook. Appreciate him for what he is and what he brings to the offense. What we've seen so far has been very positive. He's back. He's healthy. We know that there's always that question, are these players going to be able to come back and do okay? Because we've seen the Packers bring guys back, and then all of a sudden a week later they're back on injured reserve or they're back on physically unable to perform. Love what I see out of 89. The weirdest thing for me and the toughest thing about Jared Cook, Jacob, to me, is just having to get used to the fact that it's not James Jones, because I don't know if Jared Cook is going to become an all-he-does-is type of guy. I would love that, but that's going to be the biggest adjustment for me.
Well, if a jersey number is the biggest adjustment, that can't be such a bad thing. One thing to add to your Jared Cook, Jermichael Finley thing there is, you know, Jared Cook is a different player. You know, he's a big tight end. He's fast. I get all that. But Jermichael, as good as Jermichael was never really a vertical threat down the field. His best plays were catching passes in the middle of the field and making guys miss after the catch, or catching that pass in the flat and dragging a guy for 9 yards and turning a 2-yard catch into an 11-yard catch because of sheer brute force. Cook is actually going to stretch the seam a little bit, run up the middle of the field, and get vertical on the defense. That is where those guys are different. I'm excited to see this guy actually play in a real game with Aaron Rodgers. I hope that's Thursday night. I understand I'm not the coach, and if they make a different decision, I'll understand and respect that. But, damn, I'm excited to see those guys play together. Jared Cook wasn't the only tight end that did some good things, though. There's a battle to be the third tight end on the Packers roster. Kennard Backman, sixth-round pick from a year ago, and beer truck delivery driver Justin Perillo. And I call him that because, well, look at him. He looks like a beer truck delivery driver. Perillo was the guy who stood out. He was the Packers' leading receiver, 5 catches for 52 yards. The thing about Perillo is, you know, he catches just about everything thrown to him. He doesn't have the elite size or speed, but he just seems to find ways on the field. And Kennard Backman, he made a nice play as well, but Perillo seems to be showing up more and more. Whenever he's had a chance to play, he's produced. Last year against the Detroit Lions in Green Bay, of course, the game the Packers lost on the 50-whatever-yard field goal that Mason Crosby shanked. He made some really big plays in that game. He scored a touchdown. I believe he caught a two-point catch. Or no, he just scored a touchdown. He had a big catch in the middle of the field. Perillo did some good things last year when he had a chance. And this year, he's done some good things in camp, and he's done some good things in the first preseason game as well. That'll be something to watch Thursday night as well, to continue battle for the third tight end spot, because Backman is supposed to be a project, but potentially somebody that could stretch the middle of the field, but he just hasn't really done a whole lot to deserve that sort of praise just yet. But we'll see if that's something that changes. As far as the offensive line went, and then we'll move on to the defense thing. You know, starting offensive line, I thought looked pretty good. Obviously, opened some holes for Eddie Lacy. If Joe Callahan makes an easy throw, the Packers might score a touchdown on the first drive instead of kicking a field goal. And then, you know, some of the backups, Jason Spriggs, he had some moments where he looked like a rookie, and he looks like he needs a little more lead in his pants. But we kind of knew that coming in. He needs some more strength to become a run blocker, but he had a pretty good night pass protecting. And somebody that at least as of right now looks to me like he's going to be the left tackle in 2017, and obviously a lot can change between now and then. But somebody that looks like that, his pass protection was very good. Good to see. As far as the backups go, I just got to get my point in that Don Barclay is not good at football, and I want to make that very clear. He and I believe it was Lane Taylor were one of the main culprits on a play that resulted in a safety right after Micah Hyde's interception, got the Packers at the 1-yard line, which Jason, you and I both said this is totally going to be a safety, and damn it, if we weren't right, it was. But that's as far as the offense went. Not a whole lot there. I mean, Mason Crosby made some field goals. John Crockett scored a touchdown, but you know, kind of an ugly night offensively as far as point production, and that's to be expected. They've got two quarterbacks that played that aren't going to be on the roster, and they just weren't able to do a whole lot. They did some nice things moving the ball, just weren't able to consistently produce things into points, and that's okay. Again, to be expected. Hopefully Thursday night against the Raiders, at minimum, Brett Hundley can come back and give the Packers receivers a chance to make some plays down the field. Maybe Aaron Rodgers will get a chance to play in that game as well. But the defense was the story of the night. And really, you saw the first play. And again, you know, everybody always says preseason means nothing. But that doesn't mean you want your guys to look bad on that given night either. And the first play from scrimmage, Robert Griffin drops back and unleashes a bomb to Terrell Pryor. Pryor catches the ball over to Demaryius Randall. We're thinking, oh, Jesus, here we go. Some plays happen from there. Ultimately, Micah Hyde makes an incredible interception on the goal line. Dom Capers had some different things going in that series. The Packers starting front seven, or most of their starting front seven, that basically didn't include Julius Peppers or Clay Matthews. So the guys beyond that got some really good pressure. Nick Perry was rushing inside. Jason, I think the first thing that I noticed about the front seven was that Dom Capers has a lot of different chess pieces to use to rush the passer. That has to be exciting, doesn't it?
It's huge. Yeah, we kind of talked about it a little bit offline, and I want to just revert back real quick to the offensive line because you covered most of it. Barclay was asked about his performance, and he said, yeah, I thought I played okay out there. That's the first problem. That, you know, he's like, oh, first time at center. He's still looking for outs for his subpar play. And the whole backed up offense phenomena in Green Bay continues. That offense is just horrible inside their own 5-yard line. I mean, if I'm a special teams coordinator and I'm an opposing head coach playing the Packers, I want them starting inside their own 10 at every possible chance I get, because the defense is automatically has the batter down 0-2 in the count. So hopefully, I don't know what becomes of that. I mean, we're talking about second, third stringers. It was Callahan versus Rodgers. But remember last year, Rodgers got pummeled against Pittsburgh in that same situation. And I think it was Barkley that was filling in a tackle on that one, I think?
Barkley at left tackle, and he almost got Aaron Rodgers killed.
And so he is just not – and it probably has to flabbergast you as well when you think back to 2012 when he was the starting right tackle for all those games. And then you had, you know, I mean, it just absolutely baffling how they survived that season and how Aaron Rodgers didn't lose a limb. But in any event, getting back to the defense, this year, those that have been on the Fire Capers bandwagon, and I was one of them. Talk about waffling. If you want to talk about waffling, I mean, I was very vocal. If you go back and look at my Twitter feed and you have the time and care, which I hope none of you do because you've got better things to do, but if you go back and you look at the things that I said about Capers, when that wasn't really the issue last year, the defense was the strength of the team. The offense was the problem. But I was the one that said right after the season ended that I think Capers needs to go. I think the defense is ripe for some fresh ideas and some fresh blood in the coaching staff to infuse them to take a step forward and be better in 2016 than they were last year. Well, I'm already looking like a fool because Capers has got some new ideas and new wrinkles up his sleeve between doing some unique things with the personnel. I still am not convinced that we won't see Clay Matthews on the inside at least some of the time, because he did some effective things. And I'm talking about rushing the passer from the inside. He was more effective there than he's been on the outside. I mean, sometimes when Clay Matthews is on the outside, he gets run off the screen and the left tackle is just using his own aggressiveness and strength against him and just runs him right out of the play. So I'm not convinced that Clay not being inside is something that's going to be going to prevail. I think we'll see him on the inside, but you got Burnett taking some snaps at that hybrid linebacker safety, you know, kind of motivated by what the Cardinals do with Dale Buchanan and Tyrann Mathieu and, you know, players like that who kind of split some time in between, you know, playing both, you know, a Mark Barron type of guy. So that's a new wrinkle there. And that's made possible because of the fact that you've got developing corners who are ready to take that next step and who are ready to play, like Demarius Randle. Yeah, you mentioned the first play against Terrell Pryor. Okay, Pryor's made a great play. You know, I think Cleveland's onto something with him as a receiver. Demarius Randle's gotten beat deep before. It's going to happen. I mean, Richard Sherman gets beat deep. Let's be realistic here. You know, the Browns made a great play. Now, fortunately, the Packers defense bails out Demarius Randle a few plays later, which we'll talk about in more depth. But I mean, this defense is going to be good this year, and I don't think I'm sounding too much like a homer when I say that I think it's very possible they could be a top five defense in this league if everyone stays healthy and they get what they can get out of Peppers part time. If Nick Perry stays healthy and he's going to be effective in what he does, if, you know, Kyler Fackrell ended up getting a sack. Now, he wasn't blocked on the play, but he made the play. If they can get something from Fackrell, they've got a really nice – Jay Elliott, you know, I know he's your guy, Jacob, and I like him too. Wasn't too impressed with what I saw from him, and I'm not hearing the greatest things about his training camp so far, so I'm not sure how he fits into the mix. But you get that rotation of those pass rushers going, and if the defensive front is going to be solid as well, this defense is going to do some fun stuff. And I believe in Demarius Randle 100%. He got beat fine. You know, it happens. I'm not concerned about it. Sam Shields gets beat too. You know, that was completely fine. So, yeah, definitely going to be one of the more exciting things. And you know what? And we've talked about it on our shows before. There's nothing that's more exciting about watching Packers football. Obviously, we get excited when they have the football, when they have the ball on offense because Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. But when you're excited to watch the defense, that is when it is the most fun to watch football and especially to watch Packers football because it kind of is a throwback to, you know, the Lombardi days when the defense was so formidable with all the characters that they had and the rough-nosed winter January-style football. I think we're in for a season of it. It should be a pretty good thing. It should be a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely should be a fun thing to watch. You know, one guy you didn't even, or forgive me if you did, but I didn't hear you mention him as far as outside linebackers that made some plays on Friday night was Lorenzi McCray. That's a free agent that was brought in as kind of a ho-hum street free agent. He may contribute on special teams. This guy was around the quarterback quite a bit, too. He had a penalty called on him, which I thought was absolute nonsense. And I'm not the guy who complains that they'll put red jerseys on the quarterbacks or put flags on them one day. But my goodness, I mean, he hit him above the knees and brought him to the ground. I didn't see anything wrong with the play. But nonetheless, McCray made some good plays as well. Their outside linebackers really are as deep as they've ever had with down tapers. You know, a lot of people forget the Packers won a Super Bowl in 2010 with Clay Matthews, great player, 8 sacks away from being the all-time leader in Green Bay Packers history as far as sacks go. And then the other guys were Eric Walden and Frank Zombo. Nothing real special there. Now we're talking Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Nick Perry, Jay Elliott, Tyler Fackrell, Dayton Jones, Laurenti McCray. There's a lot there. It's a really deep group, and I think you can argue it's as deep as the cornerback/secondary group as far as quality players. The other thing, obviously, that people wanted to watch were the inside linebackers. Blake Martinez only played 11 snaps, recovered okay, had a missed tackle in the run game, almost to be expected, but he still looks like a guy that is picking up the defense quickly. At minimum, can be a role player this year. Sam Barrington didn't play. Jake Ryan did not play either, so you saw Blake Martinez and then Carl Bradford, of all people, kind of the forgotten guy there, was pretty good. That's something I don't think you've ever been able to say about Carl Bradford in game action. He was pretty good, looked fast, got sealed on a couple run plays, did do some good things there as well. Joe Thomas had a big hit in the run game. The inside linebacker spot's obviously going to be one that the fans and others are watching because it's been the Packers' weakness for forever. The defensive line showed some good push. Dean Lowry and Kenny Clark. No splash plays from them, but solid overall play. They look like guys that can play. Christian Ringo had a sack in the end zone. So the question I have, Jason, off that, what do we make of the D-line / inside linebackers at this point?
Yeah, good call on McCray, too. I guess one outside free agent is enough for one season. I was Ted Thompson's team, so I completely biffed it on that one. But, and I think with regards to the penalty, I'm not saying anything that you don't already know or that most of everybody else doesn't already know, but this is the refs doing the same thing that they do when you get a huge hit on a quarterback that looks close enough to be helmet to helmet. They're going to throw the flag. So McCray was on the ground. He comes up, grabs the quarterback behind or above the knee, takes him down, but it looks like a lunge at the legs from the ground, which is the Tom Brady rule, because how many rules does Tom Brady own in the NFL now? And so they're going to throw the flag to err on the side of caution. I thought it was a good attempt by McCray not to give up on the play. I thought it's one of those things where, you know, this is the reason why I hope penalties like that and stuff like that can become reviewable. Not that I want to slow the game down anymore, but you get a sack like that in a critical situation. Football is all about perseverance and not giving up, and now you're asking guys to do exactly that. So, anyway, the defensive front. I liked what I saw, but again, this was a lot of, you know, it's preseason, it's week one, there's a lot of rust out there. We have to be kind of cautious about what we expect from Kenny Clark at this point. I think a lot of people expected him to come out and light it up right away. He's just not going to do that. But he was solid. I liked what I saw from him. I think he definitely holds his point well. He's going to have to learn some technique. He's going to have to learn at the NFL level to use what strength and leverage he has to his advantage. He's going to get pushed around. if he thinks that this is Division I college again, and he's just going to have to get smart with what he does. This is where having a guy like Mike Daniels is going to be really, really beneficial for a guy like Clark, because they're both former wrestlers, and, you know, Daniels had to learn to use his size to his advantage. He's not a huge guy, but he is a great defensive lineman because of how he's learned to use it. Dean Lowry, I liked what I saw. I texted you as I was watching the replay the other day. I liked what I saw from him. And when you consider where – you had to remember where guys are drafted. You know, fourth round, that's – you know, what do you expect from a fourth rounder? Whether he was supposed to be drafted sooner or later, he's a fourth round guy. He's going to play meaningful snaps. He has to. Mike Pinnell is out for the first 4 weeks of the season. Dean Lowry is going to play meaningful snaps. Christian Ringo with the sack. That was a pretty athletic play that he made. I mean, granted, it was at the end of the game against, you know, who? I have no idea. But still a pretty athletic play. And so if he can get up and down the line that quickly, that was a nice takedown too. That was one where it was almost like I'm surprised he didn't throw the flag. Because it's just like you said, Jacob, just put the red jersey and the red hat on these guys and just call it a day. And just say, okay, you can't touch the quarterback anymore. You gotta capture the flag instead or something like that. But – you know, back to the D-line. I like the rotation. Saw Latroy Guyon get blown off the line a couple times. I don't know if that's just him taking it easy in the preseason and learning, you know, with his veteranship not to use up all of his gas tank too early in the season. But I thought he bounced back and played well. You know, these guys are bringing the nasty in terms of the attitude. I think Kenny Clark is going to be a great fit in that. In terms of that, I think he's going to catch on really quickly, and he's going to be a part of that, you know, that nasty. I liked the energy that I saw from Dayton Jones. I am encouraged. I'm encouraged by him in this new elephant role, and, you know, he's standing up. He's down in a stance. He looks hungry this year. That's the most important thing that I like to see, is I want to see guys that look like they're ready to start making some plays, and he definitely is that. So we could see some pretty good attitude. I mean, you got like the Legion of Boom in Seattle, and I wouldn't jump to the conclusion of the Green Bay Packers defensive line becoming something that the NFL fans around the league label, know, understand, or they have that kind of reputation. But it's developing into one of the big strengths of this defense. If that line can overachieve, or if they become stellar, I was talking about a top five defense with the Packers this season. That could be a huge reason why. And you put that kind of pressure on stuffing the run, they become effective that way. If they can get any kind of push on the pocket, and then you've got the pass rush doing its job, and you have that much talent in the secondary, how many turnovers and interceptions could we see? I mean, this could be the redux of the days when Woodson and Collins were back there, and it was one or two picks a game.
Yeah, it definitely could be. You know, you mentioned – Dayton Jones, and that brings me to one other guy I want to mention, Kentrell Bryce. As safety, had a good night. He's an undrafted guy vying for a spot on the roster, and he's somebody that showed out very well as far as the secondary goes on that night. No interceptions, obviously, but he was all over the field. He looked very fast. But that brings us to the first edition we have. We have a new sponsor. Ticket King is our new sponsor. Check it out. It's a location for getting Packers tickets. It's obviously in the intro. You kind of know what they do. But we have now, instead of a game ball, we have the ticket King of the Game. And my King of the Game is Dayton Jones. He had one series where he walks the tackle back into the quarterback, forces in completion. He has a sack. He was pressuring the quarterback. He looked athletic. He looked good at his new position of outside linebacker. I said it when the move was made. Maybe I'm being stubborn because I really liked the guy and some of the things that I thought he could do for this Packers defense at the time. But I really like this move. I think you're looking at potentially a big year for Dayton Jones. I don't know if that necessarily means like 10 sacks, but it could mean a lot of pressure. It could mean a lot of reps over some of the other guys. I really am looking for a big year from Dayton Jones, and Friday night was a good start. My ticket King of the Game is Dayton Jones. Jason, who is your king?
I'm going to go with Micah Hyde. He had the incredible interception at the one-yard line right after Griffin hit Pryor on that long 50-yard, 45-yard pass play. They're driving down. Griffin throws over the middle. throws an inaccurate pass. What else is new? Robert Griffin throwing an inaccurate pass. He's right behind his receiver. Hyde still had to make a very athletic play, leaves his feet, grabs the interception, hauls it in, drive thwarted, Packers get the ball back. We know what happened shortly after that, but let's not worry about that. That was another great play by Micah Hyde, and spoiler alert for those of you who visit Cheesehead TV, my Monday morning piece might just be about that guy as well. He is one that has not been talked about as much as with regards to contracts being up this year because there's been so much focus on the offensive line and who are they going to bring back there. But Micah Hyde is a guy who's in a contract year as well, and he does offer a lot to this team. Zach Jacobson, one of my fellow colleague writers at Cheesehead TV, has referred to him as a Swiss Army knife. He is exactly that. If you look on Packers.com at the depth chart and the roster, he's listed as a defensive back. He is not considered a safety or a cornerback. He's the only one that is DB next to his position, and that's because of the unique skill set and the unique things that the Packers ask him to do. He's lined up at corner. He's lined up at safety. He's lined up in the slot. He's blitzed. He's good for 2 to 3 interceptions a year because he's in the right place at the right time. He had a nice pick against the St. Louis Rams last year for that very reason. He had a pick against the Oakland Raiders last year for that very reason. He'll shock the heck out of you like he did on Friday with the leaping interception. We all have to remember that Week 17 pick that he got on Teddy Bridgewater where his back is to the line of scrimmage and he catches the ball with his left hand, one hand, while flipping over doing a somersault. And I think he was also making a sandwich at the time as well. It was unbelievable. Micah Hyde, it was an easy choice for me. I mean, I would have given it to Joe Callahan, too, because of the fact that he stepped in and I thought played great for somebody that probably wasn't expected to play as much as he did because of the injury to, and I'm having a complete brain, Hundley, Brett Hundley. You know why I forget his name, Jacob? It's because he played at UCLA, so I feel like I should get a hall pass for that. But nonetheless, got to go with Micah Hyde, and check out Cheesehead TV because I'm going to write about Hyde and talk about one of the reasons why I think the Packers need to give some strong consideration to what they're going to do with him in moving forward because, yes, they have a lot of talent in the secondary, and you mentioned Kentrell Bryce, and I want to kind of circle back to him before we move on to the next spot. So I'll kick it back to you and then just let me know if we're ready to move forward because I did have something I want to mention to him. But Hyde is one of those guys who – holds a lot of value, and if he's going to be a punt returner, obviously it's even more depth. But smart guy, made a great play, and while he's not very athletic, in the right place at the right time, my ticket king of the game is Micah Hyde.
So you have a ticket king of the game, and I would be remiss if I did not make an Event Sevenfold reference here. Hail to the king, in this case, Dayton Jones, or Micah Hyde, whoever you are asking from us. So mine, Dayton Jones. Jason, Micah Hyde, and I agree. Swiss Army knife is a great way to describe him. Again, not very athletic. If you ask him to do some things that he's not necessarily suited to do, it will look bad, and it'll look very bad. But he does do some things very well. I hate the adage of good football player because typically that means someone is not really great at anything. They're smart. You know, the Packers have used that phrase for Richard Rodgers, for example. In the past, it was also a phrase used by media types for, while we're talking about divine beings, Tim Tebow. It was a phrase they used for him. He's not a good quarterback, but he's a good football player. I hate that adage, but Micah Hyde is a good football player. He doesn't do anything particularly great, but he does do a lot of things for the Packers. He's smart. He's heady. He's always in the right position. Jason, you kind of went over all that stuff. He's a solid role player for the Packers. He could be someone that they could choose to upgrade from this offseason, but if they bring him back on a relatively modest deal, you won't hear me complain too much as far as that thing goes. And then, Jason, if you want to go for Kentrell Bryce, we've got a few minutes, but I do want to move on to Oakland. So if you got a few things you want to add, feel free. Otherwise, we can move on to the Raiders.
We're not moving on to Cincinnati, Jacob. We're moving on to Oakland. We're not on to Cincinnati.
No, we are not.
So
thank you for that trick reference there.
Okay, so Jacob, Kentrell Bryce, tell me if this sounds familiar to you. 5'11", 201, Louisiana Tech, undrafted free agent, defensive back.
The undrafted part's where you lose me. Who am I missing here?
So, and the irony is, who Green Bay's opponent was this past week, because the player that I am and referring to was on the other side of the ball and spent many years in a Packers uniform. I am talking about Tremont Williams.
Tremont Williams.
So, you know, I know that, like I said earlier, we have to stop sometimes comparing current player A to former player B. But Bryce was all over the field, like you said, Jacob. He looked really good, and we know the Packers have a couple guys on the undrafted pool that tend to make the roster every year. So could Bryce be one of those guys? Well, right now, he looks like a front runner in that conversation. So, I mean, I have to go back, and like I was saying earlier, I saw his name a lot, and I kind of went back and started watching some more of the game to try to refresh myself, and he's flying all over the place everywhere. I mean, some guys, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, I want to see guys that are fired up and that are hungry to play well, like a Dayton Jones, and show a little bit of emotion and bring that nasty to the defense. Well, this guy understands that he is in a very deep defensive back group for the Packers. If he's going to make this roster, he's going to have to unseat somebody, and he is playing like he's trying to do just that. You know, rookies and guys like this that aren't afraid to take somebody's job from them and be better and seize the moment, that's the kind of guy you want on your defense, and especially in the secondary, where the Packers have forged a reputation over the past couple decades for taking the ball away and picking the balls off. So, looks great. But I had to make that reference because, you know, history may possibly be repeating itself again this year. And if Kentrell Bryce does crack this roster, and if any of those comparisons end up becoming true, although he's a safety and Tremont Williams was a cornerback, then here's another gem for Ted Thompson. But all of those similarities are there. So if we're looking at any kind of the possibility of Bryce bringing the kind of success that Tremont brought to this team, then the Packers are much, much all the better for it.
They absolutely are. This is a guy I've kind of had my eyes on since, because there's a guy, Eye in the Sky is what his name is on Twitter. He's a film guy, watches every game on tape, gives out his analysis through that. We're trying to get him on this show, so hopefully we can do that at some point. But he's a guy that Eye in the Sky talk about, you know, Kentrell Bryce. So, definitely some interesting stuff there. Maybe he makes a run at a roster spot. He's somebody that my eyes will be on Thursday night, which brings me to Thursday night. The Packers play the Oakland Raiders at Lambeau Field. It will be the last time that they are at Lambeau Field until they open at home against the Detroit Lions in week 3 of the regular season. So a really long layoff for games at Lambeau Field. Some things, some notes there. Aaron Rodgers said on TV during the Friday night game against the Cleveland Browns that he was going to play. So a little excitement there, maybe, but his practice reps today said that maybe he won't play on Thursday night. So I don't know. That all remains to be seen. The good news is Brett Hundley was back in pads today. He was taking a lot of reps. So hopefully that means at least Brett Hundley plays so the Packers can have something resembling NFL quarterback play. Again, no offense to Joe Callahan or Marquise Williams, but as of right now, today, those guys are not NFL quarterbacks. Maybe after a year or so in the practice squad they could be, but right now they're not, and in order to really evaluate this wide receiver competition, the Packers do need competent quarterback play. So what I want to know, Jason, they play the Raiders. That's an up-and-coming football team. I think they're going to be a good team this year. I haven't, you know, we'll go through our regular season show here. Let's see. We'll probably do that the week of September 3rd and 4th, somewhere around there. Don't quote me on that. Jason and I will discuss an exact date for our regular season preview show that we've done every year of this show, so all one of them. This will be the second installment of that show. So I don't know what I think about the Raiders specifically until I go through all 16 games and pick them, but should be a good team. They have some good, talented players on both sides of the ball. Should be a much better test for the Packers starters, key players, than it was against the Cleveland Browns. But what I want to know is, what are three things you are watching against the Oakland Raiders? And the first one for me is the wide receivers, and that namely means Jared Aberderis or other receivers that potentially get some reps with Aaron Rodgers if he does play, to see how they take advantage of that. If Rodgers doesn't play, I'm still watching to see who makes plays with Brett Hundley, who's open down the middle of the field, who's open on the boundary, who's making plays in the passing game, because really the Packers receivers last year were atrocious, and they do need to be better this year than they were last year in order for this offense to get back to where it was. And the return of Jordy Nelson will certainly help a lot, but they do need some production from guys like Davante Adams, Ty Montgomery, Jared Aberderis, guys of that nature. And if Janis were to play, obviously he would be in that discussion as well. Trevor Davis. I'm excited to see Geronimo Allison also. That's a guy I talked about after the draft. I was stunned that he wasn't drafted just because of his size, and I watched him play a little bit at Illinois, and I thought he was a draftable player, apparently, in the NFL. Thought otherwise, their loss is apparently the Packers' gain. But I'm looking at the wide receivers first and foremost. I want to see Blake Martinez's coverage abilities as an inside linebacker. McCarthy said today that he wished that he could have played more than 11 snaps on Friday night, and that's something that I think we'll see more of, more snaps for him. He should have a good test with some of the Raiders' tight ends. Clive Walford is a very good downfield threat. The Raiders like to throw him the ball, see if Blake Martinez can make some plays there. They have some running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield as well, so I do also want to see that. And the other thing I want to see is the Packers' pass rush. The Raiders' offensive line is quietly very, very good. I want to see if they can get pressure on Derek Carr or whoever the Raiders' quarterback is at that given moment with their starting offensive line. I want to see them build on that pass rush. We'll see if Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers play. That remains to be seen. But even if they don't play, I want to see Dayton Jones build on his performance. Nick Perry, same thing. Laurenti McCray, Jay Elliott, Kyler Fackrell. There's a lot of good stuff. And maybe this is good, maybe this is bad. I don't know as far as what I'll be able to see, but I will be in attendance Thursday night, so it'll be my first trip to Lambeau Field since January 3rd. That is exciting for me. You know, I've often said the preseason is a necessary evil. Something I like to do is go to a preseason game if I can, just to get back in the swing of things, visit the stadium, get in the mode of being a fan again. Those kinds of things. So I'm excited to be back in the stadium on Thursday night as well. Hopefully Aaron Rodgers and some of the starters play so I can get a small taste of that and, you know, get him in the end zone a couple times, give me a few things to get wild and crazy about. But those are three things I'm watching. Wide receivers, Blake Martinez, and the Packers pass rush. Jason, what are your three things to watch against the Oakland Raiders?
Well, the first one's a catch-all. I'm looking for guys who need to bounce back this week after having a rough outing or who didn't really take many steps towards securing a roster spot. I want to see them either, you know, go or get off the pot is basically what I'm saying. And so, like, one name that comes to mind is, like, a Carl Bradford. You know, yes, he's my guy. He went to ASU, but this is a do-or-die for Carl Bradford. He needs to decide, are you going to be on this team or are you not going to be on this team? So it's time to start seeing guys take hold of their positions and their chances to make this roster. Jaron Elliott needs to bounce back and have a big week. Want to see that. I obviously want to see Aaron Rodgers. The few snaps that we're going to see him for, I think we'll be lucky if we see him more than two series on Thursday night. But I'm looking to see how he comes out and how he looks, because hopefully he'll get a chance to throw it a couple times. I want to see that offense start to gel. It'll just make me feel better if I can see the evidence of it. I know it's only the preseason, but those things matter. So that's item number one, is roster battles and position battles starting to take more shape and give us some clarity there. With Janis hurt, I want to see who else can return kicks. I legitimately want to see in the return game what kind of skills and ability we have here, whether it's Ty Montgomery or Trevor Davis or whoever else they want to stick back there. Who's going to be able to take that spot over? Because I'll be honest with you, if there's a returner that's capable and I see – okay, that guy looks like he can do this job for real when the games count, then I will feel better regardless of what happens with Janis. Because right now, on the special team side of things, I'm definitely nervous with him hurt. And if he's going to miss any extended time, it does make me nervous just because he was able to ignite that return game at least once or twice a game last season. So it's a loss. I want to see what they're going to do to try to mitigate that. Then the next one I mentioned – kind of subtly when we were talking about Kentrell Bryce and the Packers defensive backs, I want to start seeing them take the ball away. I want to see the defense start to get after the football, pick off some passes. I know Micah Hyde had the interception, which was great. I want to see some of these cornerbacks ball hawking again. That's the kind of defense that's always gotten the Packers very far. Whenever they've had a lot of success, that was always one of the ingredients that went into those seasons. So on the defensive backfield side of things, and I guess maybe more Quentin Rollins, Demaryius Randall, want to see a football in their hands and see them getting busy with the ball. So those are my three things that I'm looking for. I mean, it's not week three. You know, the big preseason game is the third one, which would be the following week, which would be next week. But those are the steps I'm hoping to see these guys take. And then naturally, and I think you and I both would agree. The fourth is health. No injuries, please.
Packers first preseason. That was really the best news that came out of the Packers first preseason game was that, you know, they had no major injuries to report other than, you know, Jeff Janis obviously with the fracture in his hand, but that was something that happened in practice. They didn't have any of their major contributors go down with an injury. And, you know, that was something obviously it happened a year ago. You know, Jordy Nelson was lost for the season. Randall Cobb hurt his shoulder the following week, and that clearly affected him the first couple weeks of the season. You know, there's just the main thing really is health. And, you know, obviously from a selfish standpoint, you want to see the guys play, but you also understand why, you know, Mike McCarthy would hold out some of his big guns. You know, Aaron Rodgers didn't play the other night. Randall Cobb didn't play the other night. Some of the other guys, you know, Morgan Burnett didn't play very much. Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews didn't play. You know, they held out a lot of guys. I think at some point you're going to see some of these guys play at least a little bit to get themselves in the swing of things, get some quality reps. Game reps against another team, stuff like that. Aaron Rodgers has said that the practice reps are almost better for him because that's a good defense that he's playing against. And Jason, we've talked about that. Obviously, we think that's true as well. But at some point, you got to play against somebody else that actually, you know, when you run across, you're seeing some of these plays where people are like, this guy made a great catch, but had it been a game, somebody had him sized up and was ready to deliver a big hit. Well, against another team, they actually are going to hit you. So that's That's something that you want to see. Can guys make plays when they know the other team actually will hit them and try to make some plays against them? Not saying the Packers defense doesn't try to make plays against them, but you know, they're not actually hitting full bore in practice. But Thursday, it'll be at Lambeau Field against the Oakland Raiders, a good up and coming team. All of the preseason matches, you know, we've talked about the third one. The third preseason game is typically a dress rehearsal, or at least it has been in the past. Last year it wasn't. Aaron Rodgers didn't play in the third preseason game last year because of the injury to Jordy Nelson. So basically after that, Mike McCarthy said, forget it. We already lost one of our big guns. We're not losing another one. But that's against the San Francisco 49ers, and nothing against the 49ers, but their roster within a two-year span has gone from one of the best in the league to maybe one of the worst. And God bless you every day, Jed York, because without your contributions, Jim Harbaugh would not be leading my Michigan Wolverines to what I hope will be, at minimum, a Big Ten title. I'm trying to temper my expectations. I know the media won't allow me to do that, but I'm trying at least to temper my expectations for that team. But the 49ers, they're just not a very good football team. And I feel, to some degree, for Chip Kelly, because I still think Chip Kelly's a good coach. He's a bad GM, and that's what got him really worked over in Philadelphia. But this year is just not going to go very well for him, I don't think. So I don't know if the 49ers are going to present that much of a challenge. But the Raiders will. I think that's a good team. Again, Khalil Mack, Bruce Irvin, they've got some good players on defense. Their offensive line is very good. Derek Carr is a good quarterback. They've got Amari Cooper. We kind of saw a little bit of what the Raiders could be last year. With the Packers heading out there, the Raiders had a lead in that game at one point. The Packers came back and won, which clinched their spot in the playoffs. So that's a good team, and you'll see at least some of that on Thursday night. And with that, that will be the end of today's show. We had a long one today. See, this is what happens when bad things happen to Jeff Janis. We spent a lot of time talking about that, so we have an hour and a half show for you today. But it was good to be back with you guys today. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. We answered questions at the beginning of the show that were sent to our tagline. Send us questions. We'll be more than happy to answer them for you. Send us questions to our personal Twitters. You can do that. Jason is at Jason Perrone. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. Send us anything. Tell us we're stupid. I don't care. We like fan interaction because without you guys, this show does not exist. We appreciate having you guys listen every single week. Thank you to our sponsor, Ticket King. Again, if you want tickets to a Packers game, check them out. They can help you out. It's really a short walk from the stadium. I pass it every single time that I go. It's right there, right across the street from the stadium. So it's a nice little spot for them to go. Grab your tickets, head into the game, and cheer on the Pack. And then obviously, one other thing I think we'd be remiss if we didn't do, that is Aaron Nagler, the guy who kind of co-founded, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jason, but Cheesehead TV accepted a job in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He's working with the Press Gazette, so congratulations to Aaron. Follow him. He's got some good stuff that he does on Monday mornings after the games or day after the game, whenever that is. He's got some film stuff. He's going to be doing some digital stuff for the Press Gazette now. That's a really good addition for them. So congratulations to Aaron there. And we will be back 1 week from today. Next Sunday, we'll be breaking down Packers-Raiders and looking ahead to Packers-49ers. And hopefully by that day, we can announce when our season breakdown show is going to be, our regular season breakdown show. So hopefully we can have that for you next week. So all kinds of stuff there. I say all that to say thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.